You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We Crashed, Episode 7, The Power of We is over, but we are going public here on Post Show Recaps. I am Brooklyn Zed, and we are here to cover Episode 7, The Power of We, written by Ava Anderson and Eleanor Burgess, and directed by Tinga Krishnan, the same director we had for the previous episode. And while our We trio is a bit more We this week, there are only two of us. I am not alone. DJ LaBelle Klein, Mr. Troy. I made you laugh.
Did you just do a wee-w-e-wee-w-e-e pun in the first minute of the podcast?
I did. I'm pretty proud of myself.
That is an incredible initial public offering, Zed. Well, as Zed was alluding to, we are short one person today, much like Miguel in the WeWork S1. Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz will not be making as much of an appearance this week. She's a little under the weather, but I think the two of us can barrel forward. What do you think?
It's always been me and you, Troy.
Is it? Oh, that's right. It's not been me. It's been we the whole time. It really started with you, Zed. You're the reason we have this podcast in the first place. So if it's there's true. Ever going to be a me here, it should be you.
I did. I was the one who saw the trailer for the show while watching Severance. And I said, "Ooh, an opportunity to yell about the failings of capitalism. Who do I know who also hates capitalism?" And Amanda expressed interest in the show specifically. And you and I have spent many an hour after midnight talking about politics and the
economy.
Talking
about politics. I know enough about it. We're going to be doing some debunking and some explaining this week for sure. I think it also was a good idea. We've earlier learned that you are a bit of a maverick and I am a bit of a muse. So mm-hmm. I think we are good partners, even though we have to fly solo this week.
Yeah, we don't have our magician.
Don't expect magic, folks. That's actually the best. That is the best expectation setting for this week's podcast. We are used to being a three-legged stool here and there's only two of us, and this ladder could teeter totter in any direction.
Fortunately, two legs is enough to stand on, I hope, I think.
For some of us. Not if you're drunk on the Don Julio, or whatever tequila you're
or
drinking.
Fancier tequila that I'm sure I've never even heard of.
I'm sure. Well, Zed, what did you think? Just general impression of this week's episode, The Power of We.
I think it was longer than it needed to be. I mean, that's where we're at with the series entirely, right? Is like, yes, this could have been six episodes easily. We are again kind of spinning our wheels here. We were on the brink of the IPO last week, and we're still on the brink of the IPO now. I would say the action that happened was Rebecca and Adam made up from their fight.
Yeah,
what happened at the end of the last episode.
It was a 50-minute makeup session with a whole bunch of NBA terms thrown in.
Oh my god.
And look, I mean, there's only so much like EBITDA, S1, IPO, the, you know, acronym soup that you can throw out to make up for the fact that like we are bridging here. We are building a long bridge between episodes 4, 5, 6 and where we know we're going to be in episode 8. And we talked about it a little bit at the end of the last podcast, but we talked about it even more after we stopped recording. This series should really be 5 or 6 episodes. And
yeah,
you really feel it this week.
And what's interesting to me, I keep going back to the summer camp episode and that backstory on Rebecca that we got and how that kind of seemed to have nothing to do with anything else that has happened on this show. And so I wonder why was it there?
I think the whole notion there was to create some sort of allegory or connection with her having to defend Adam and her relationship and her getting in trouble. And I think just generally that gets to the overall, I guess, issue or observation about the way the show has been crafted. The writing is certainly hits some dopamine to pull from the headlines and say, you know, we enjoy watching the madness of it all, I think. But from a directing and storytelling standpoint, it feels like each episode is trying to be its own little bottle episode or its own little way that it's telling the story, and it's not connecting it through, I think, in a very thoughtful way. The sort of ways in which the backstory fuels into Rebecca or the little bit of Adam's backstory that we get, they had 8 episodes to give us a lot more, and they just haven't.
Yeah, I liked what they did with giving us Rebecca's backstory. It was told in kind of a confusing way with those flashes of the gavel and us not really knowing what that was a reference to until much later. And it made me feel like I had missed something that I hadn't missed. But I wish that they'd done more of that, essentially, and that we'd seen more. And we were talking about this last week, like seeing Miguel's life or getting to know some of these other people more. Miguel in particular, like I get that he is clearly sidelined in the S1. I now sort of know what that it's horrifying. The business things I'm learning watching this show.
You haven't spent 3 weeks on Wall Street, Zed?
No.
Not even occupying Wall Street. That's impressive.
I've marched on Wall Street a handful of times, but no, I did not spend 3 weeks there. We see him being sidelined in that way, but like he's really being sidelined in the show too. And yeah, I think it's doing a disservice to the telling of the story that we are not getting more of Miguel's perspective here. Well, I don't think focusing on the love story is like necessarily the best or most interesting or effective way to like tell us what's happening.
I think this is where marketing and the kind of business executive within the Apple TV Plus boardroom really comes to play, because this is a vehicle for Anne Hathaway and Jared Leto. That's what it's marketed as, and that's what it's crafted as. And it's fine. I mean, there's some excellent, excellent acting. And I know we're kind of already like doing a eulogy on the show in a way, but maybe we're pre-eulogizing here. I think a character like Miguel has a lot of opportunity. They've showed this episode for interesting little subplots and stories and things that are kind of comedic. But that's clearly not the direction they've chosen to go. And I think you see an episode like this I think you feel the brunt of it. It's so much Adam and Rebecca that it kind of gets overwhelming. And
then so random when they do give us that little like art buying scene.
We'll get there. We'll get there, Zed. We'll get there.
Yeah, we will indeed.
As will your cat get off of the desk.
Water bottle. So should we get into the episode and we'll further dissect something that doesn't need a lot of dissecting?
I feel compelled at some point to like give you some sort of safety valve where you can, if I get too deep into the Wall Street or business speak of it all, just hit like an emergency button and we'll release the golden parachute and we'll move on to other things.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get started then. This is a thing that they decided to put in this show. Presumably some sort of YouTube personality called Professor G, who explains economic things. And so the episode starts with the opening credits for the Professor G show. And he's explaining what an IPO is. Maybe this is where the show is like, let us really break these things down for you and like put in this mechanism to explain some of this business stuff. But I just found it unnecessary. I was like, this is just people saying more business words at me and I don't want them.
Did you ever watch The Big Short, the movie about the 2008 thing?
I watched Inside Job. I don't think I watched The Big Short. Okay, Inside Job was about the housing.
Yeah, I think The Big Short was the one based on the Michael Lewis book, and it was the one where they interspliced people explaining the complicated business concepts behind the crash in 2008. So like, what is a collateralized debt obligation and what are credit default swaps? But they always did it in like a creative way. They got celebrities to do it. So like, they had a celebrity, I forget who it was, a celebrity in a bathtub explaining credit default swaps, and then a celebrity chef explained CDOs. And so I think this was the show's attempt to kind of do that, and they just didn't do it as well. They didn't execute it as well, where they knew there are these things that are essential for an audience to understand at some level. And so we're going to try and explain it. But here's the piece that I think actually is important. And they really don't make this clear. So it's not surprising that like it passed by you or most viewers. Scott Galloway is a real person. Professor G is like
I figured he was. Yeah.
And he wrote like an infamous blog post, which I have recently read since watching this episode, about WeWork. So that blog
is
post,
he the one who tears apart their S1 that gets referenced?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, with
you
the subject
line.
You
have to be paying such close attention to, and I'm like watching the show to take notes to podcast about it, and that name like flew in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, and it should for most people, right? Like, he's meant to be semi-credible but also like semi-outrageous, and that's like a reasonable description of Scott Galloway. He is a former startup CEO, business advisor. He's now a professor at NYU School of Business, and he has his own show on CNN Plus. Yeah, there you go, Zed. You are complicit in the corporate. Is it not?
Hey. Tish and Stern have nothing to do with each other, just to be perfectly clear.
I don't know. Whoever they're named after probably were friends with each other. That's my guess. But yeah, Galloway has to come in and explain what an IPO is. Later on, we get an explanation of EBITDA, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Yeah, but I think one of the things he emphasizes, which is important, is that IPOs are risky. IPOs are the moment where a public company comes out and says, yeah, we'll open up our books. Please come invest in us. We're a good investment. And unsurprisingly,
but they explained that last week.
I agree.
That
We're
was
just
the
repeating.
Whole thing Cam said and did.
I know. Yep. Okay. Well, then if they're going to belabor the point, then we should not. And we should move on to where? What? Google's headquarters? We're suddenly at Google?
Why did we get this scene? Adam has a scale model of a building, but it's not put together properly because his assistants aren't there because they had to go to the hospital, whatever. And the point is, the people at Google keep asking him, why are you coming to Google? Why are you coming to us? How are you a tech company? Why aren't you talking to SoftBank? Like, you really have no business here.
Well, and just from like a story structure perspective, every single scene should be explaining something, either more of the character or driving some sort of change in the story. If you remove this scene from the episode, nothing changes.
Yeah.
Which tells me it's a totally wasted scene. I'm sure it's based on fact, but it does feel like one of those stories that an auntie tells you where she's telling every single element of the story, even though it's not important.
Right.
And but sure. Okay. Maybe Adam went to Google, asked for money. He's desperate. SoftBank has fallen through. Maybe he's trying to again get money without an IPO.
Yeah. Well, and they again say, why don't you just go through with an IPO? And this is the crux of the episode. We're going to see, you know, half a dozen different people tell Adam it's time for the IPO.
Yeah.
And so eventually that's what we're going to get, except that we also know the series started with Adam being kicked by the company and the IPO not happening. So like, what are we leading up to if we're going to spend two episodes going, okay, we're going to do the IPO, but we know that we're not.
Well, I guess what they're trying to say is that the botching of the IPO is the is the proximate event that leads to Adam's departure. So we need to investigate that in incredible detail.
It does seem to be the final like nail in his coffin as CEO.
Yeah, I mean, and anytime you go traipsing down Wall Street, they're going to see if you've got no clothes on. And like, it's not just shoes. Adam has no clothes in this. The Emperor has no clothes in this context. And the tools that they have, the S1s and the prospectuses, plural, are what helps them determine that. So I guess it's important to show that stuff. But again,
yeah, it just could have been done more succinctly for sure. And we are going to finally get like a little bit of insight into some of the employees in this episode, and yet still not at all the way that
not at all interesting or multifaceted. It's literally just about the ways in which they interact with Adam and with WeWork's IPO.
Yeah, although we're going to talk about the price of that handbag at the end of the episode.
Okay, good. Okay, if you have thoughts or maybe research, yeah, I don't know, but the premise of this episode, the sole narrative function of this episode is to get Adam and Rebecca back together, because they essentially broke them up at the end of the last episode. This one, we have to get back together. Rebecca's focus, though, is not on Adam at this point.
No. Well, she's having a bit of a tantrum, it kind of feels like. In the way that, like, I think she's completely justified in being
okay. Good. Furious. I was worried you were gonna say
no. Being furious at Adam for what he said is totally appropriate. What he said was really unacceptable and hurtful and wrong, and like not accurate to the situation, at least as it's been presented to us. So I think that's fair, but I also think, because of the pressure she has between in comparing herself and WeGrow to WeWork, she is like lashing out at people and being a little intense. Not that she isn't always intense, but the teachers have to wear shoes that are white, beige, or brown. And I don't like this teacher singing voice at our Cinco de Mayo party.
I was going to ask you to rank order the offenses that are justified at her being angry. Non-beige shoes or
Adam no laces.
Crushing
her
to the
floor. Oh my God, no laces.
That definitely had a no wire hangers sort of feel to it. Yeah, but you know, Rebecca is a CEO at this point, so she really needs to.
She's the CEO of WeGrow. Yeah,
she's the CEO of WeGrow. She and is it B? Is that who her assistant? I have to talk about action items. Action items. Again, I think Zed always tenses up whenever they hear that phrase. but what are we doing? We're talking about WeGrow San Francisco and WeGrow Tel Aviv.
Classic. That's where you go. New York, San Francisco, Tel Aviv. Done.
Growth at any cost.
She wants to expand her locations.
I mean, she learned from the best.
Uh-huh.
She learned from the best. Okay, so it's not just about what the teachers are wearing, how the teachers are singing, or where we're going to expand. We're also going to create a lemonade stand for the 21st century. We're going to have kids go to the family farm.
Is that what it is?
I don't know. I didn't track on this.
Confused.
I thought we are. Did we already have the lemonade stand thing, or am I just remembering this from the actual podcast interview that I listened to last week? But
I think you're remembering it from the actual podcast.
Okay, is this the first time we've had the appearance of the lemonade stand on the show?
I think so. And my thing was, she said our farm, but I feel like our farm means the Newman farm or the Paltrow farm, not WeWork's farm. As far as I know, WeWork does not We Farm yet.
Well, they're like 3 weeks old. So yeah. Like what grows in 3 weeks?
I don't know.
Oh, it's strawberries? I don't know. Something go. Y'all tell me if you're listening to this, tell me what grows in 3 weeks. Because I'm pretty sure you're not planting your We Grow family farm. And then lemons do not grow in 3 weeks. I can tell you that much. There is an irony about it being a lemon tree. You got a little bit of a lemon product here. But true. Yes, even Rebecca cues into that sounding a little weird to pick lemonades and vegetables and sell it to WeWork employees. She says conscious entrepreneurship for five-year-olds.
For five-year-olds.
Is that in this world of things needing to be age appropriate, at what age is conscious entrepreneur?
What?
Not the eye roll.
What is conscientious, right? Conscientious, one of those.
I don't know. It's made up.
Yeah. Well, exactly my point, right? When is the appropriate time to teach children this made up concept? I don't know. Do we have to indoctrinate children with capitalism in preschool? Clearly we do.
What's wild to me is much like Rebecca talking about holistic learning and that actually being something that could be good
right.
in the hands of a seasoned practitioner, conscious entrepreneurship, like entrepreneurship with some like ethical, conscientious, some awareness of the impact on people in society, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. But are Adam and Rebecca Newman the people that you would trust to teach your kids about that?
I mean, clearly not. Because they don't know anything about teaching. This is something that I feel very strongly, is that you can be very good at a thing and not be good at teaching that thing. Not that she's a teacher at the school. She's just running the school, even though she knows nothing about running a school.
There's a reason that Michael Jordan was not a basketball coach, right?
Yeah. He was too good to know how to tell other people how to play basketball because they can't. He'd be like, do what I do. And they can't. So don't get me started on Michael Jordan. We're trying to stay on the rails.
Okay. All right.
We'll talk about the 90s Bulls for 20 minutes.
We'll stay on the rails as best we can.
Yeah. So we're going to do the 21st century. I appreciate that her assistant is like an avatar for us in this moment, watching Rebecca say all this crazy shit, and is like, okay, yep, I'm writing down the things you said.
I'm sorry, but you gotta know, anyone who has been her assistant for as long as the show pretends to have this person be her assistant, they're bought in. They've got to be bought in, because you're telling me every single person at the company is like, yeah, no, they're crazy, but I'm gonna keep working here. I mean, sure, some people will.
For the FOMO, Troy.
I guess so, for the FOMO and the t-shirts and the beer in the sex closet. We really haven't come back to that one, but
no, that didn't go anywhere. Chloe had that friend who is someone I went to college with, and we haven't seen him since the summer camp episode.
Not at all. Well, let's see here. We do have some reappearing people. We do have Bruce is reappearing. He would like for Adam to make an IPO. So third scene talking about making an IPO in about what, 15 minutes?
Yeah, this is still very early in the episode.
Yeah. And Adam and Rebecca, Adam's trying to be apologetic. Rebecca's not.
He's been
it.
Calling and texting her, and she has been ignoring all of his calls. We saw this particularly while she was at the school on Cinco de Mayo. And yeah, he's going to walk in as she is leaving to run the school that he gave her.
I know you think I don't do anything, but I actually do. It's a reasonable comeback.
Yeah, it's true.
I do love the quote that, yeah, thank you, Zed, for the note on this one that you wrote down. Rebecca says, my therapist says you can only hate someone you truly love. Guess I truly love you.
I feel that.
What do you think? Do you agree with that? Can you only hate someone you truly love?
Well, now I'm thinking about the people that I hate. And I do not love a lot of them. But I'm mostly thinking of politicians.
Yeah. I think we're thinking of the same person.
Yeah. Well, I have a list I could rattle off easily. But I hate all billionaires and I don't love them.
Yeah, I could see that.
You want to talk personal relationships, people you actually know and interact with, I think there are a lot of close connections between love and hate that both come from caring and having investment in someone. And I don't mean monetarily, I mean emotionally. Because you have to have an emotional investment in the people in your life in order to hate them. Like the opposite of love isn't hate, it's apathy. Apathy is worse.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I think that's true in a way. And you know, you've made yourself vulnerable to them. They've taken advantage of that. I think Adam and Rebecca are clearly some type of codependent with one another. And Adam, you know, Adam screwed up. He's gonna try and make up for it. I mean, they do this thing as a show where they try and make him endearing within the relationship, but also very cruel within the relationship. And it's a little toxic, some would say. But yeah. This episode, we get good at him. Kind of.
I guess. I feel like we're really getting more of the same. Because now Adam's at Chase with his personal banker, the head of Chase, wanting to increase his personal line of credit while WeWork is burning through $58 million a week. And Jamie's going to suggest the IPO, and Adam is going to once again say he doesn't want to answer to anyone, including, you know, Masayoshi-san, who has invested $4 billion in this company. Then they're going to talk about the trophies, the IPO trophies, and how
again,
this would be a unicorn.
This is probably based on something real. Like if I go into Jamie Dimon's office, maybe I am going to find a box trophy for Dropbox or whatever. But it did, again, feel like, oh, we've built an exposition scene wherein we get to explain. What it reminded me of was the Star Trek technobabble scenes. Where they cut away from the character story and just transmogrify the endorphin mechanisms with the yada yada. You know, they just start throwing out phrases to explain away what's going to happen. Yeah. I understood what he's saying. I speak that language to some extent, but
I don't care about the percentages the stocks increased on the day of their IPO. I really don't.
No, I think what we're supposed to take away from this is that Adam is burning more money and wants more personal money. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, this is a unicorn stampedes type environment where there are these companies who are IPOing and are being very successful. Mm-hmm. That's the norm. That's the expectation they're playing against. Spoiler alert, WeWork does not work out.
We not work. Also not working, Rebecca is at the WeWork office talking about enrollment with her staff, and the numbers are dispiriting.
You know what's not low in numbers? The number of people in that office
is so many people.
So many people.
There's gotta be a bigger room where that could happen. Why is that meeting not just happening at the school?
It's because it's her office. It's this her C-suite, right? I wish I had paused and counted the number of people there.
There had to be like a dozen people in that office.
The administrator to student ratio must be absurd at that school.
With their numbers so small, apparently. Damien's suggestion is that they revolutionize or re-energize their social media presence. Rebecca points out that they only have like 600 followers on Instagram. There is no social media presence.
This was the only quote I wrote down from the entire episode. Oh, no. One of only two. First one. There's nothing to revamp, Damien.
Uh-huh.
It feels like something that would come out of Mean Girls. There's nothing to revamp, Damien.
Yeah, very accurate. Rebecca's plan is to go on CNBC after B suggests, you did get that offer, that invitation to do that podcast. And she's like, oh, yeah, do we think going from Vanity Fair to a podcast is a good move for me?
The podcast hatred.
Yeah.
Can we stand for this, Ed?
No, absolutely not. And guess what? She's going to do the podcast because we listened to it last week.
That's right. We do know. I got so hyped for that 30 seconds leading up to that scene because I was like, oh, they're going to do it. Uh-huh. We anticipated it. So I would like to, as an adamant anti-spoiler person, apologize to the 7 listeners of this podcast for spoiling this week's scene of Rebecca Newman that we played clips of last week.
Yeah. I mean, I think we played some stuff that was slightly different from the excerpts that we got in the episode. Do you hate anyone? No. I don't hate.
What was so wild is I did go on to listen to the whole episode. Every single one of these was directly pulled.
Oh, yeah, of course.
From that.
It's like source material you can go access.
We did get the collective we that we are all operating under phrase.
We are. See, this is why Amanda needs to be here.
I know. Amanda could probably tell us a lot more about that podcast episode. But the flexible spine to prevent aging. We got it all.
She feels sad about cruelty to animals and kids suffering and what we're doing to the planet.
It's uncomfortable.
People have to understand that we are one.
This is where I come away with like the notion, like she is sincere, I think. I think she legitimately believes these things and is not a snake oil salesman in any way. But to have someone like get that emotional that quickly on a podcast and then quickly turn around later and talk about the answer the rest of the questions, it was a little
It feels a little wild.
it was a little wild, but yeah, there we go. Put one in the box of post-show recaps predicting what's gonna happen on the show. Maybe we'll do another one for next week.
I predict things are gonna go poorly.
Well, speaking of things going poorly, always looking for a transition here. Adam and Miguel, we get a little bit of Miguel, as we mentioned on this episode, but Miguel's kind of like the C plot, of the episode. And it's about buying a Liechtenstein painting. Now I actually think this is maybe where I should stop. I'm a big Roy Liechtenstein fan. I really like the art. I immediately recognized it. I was like, yep, that's great stuff. That's good taste. Ultimately, what he purchased?
Different.
Not what I would buy. For and display a corporate
environment.
Office.
Yeah. but he doesn't have the real Liechtenstein. He has a poster that he got for $20 from posters.com.
I mean,
he's perfectly happy with it, but Adam wants him to buy real art.
Yeah, I mean, you bought posters and stuff. You did the dorm room thing, right? Mm-hmm. Did you buy like the posterized version of legitimate art pieces?
I mean, no, I am a theater kid, so I had a bunch of like show posters. I have 3 framed on my wall. 2 of them are Hedwig. 1 of them is Rent, if anyone was curious. I did a lot of postcards. I would like artfully display postcards because those you could get for free in a lot of establishments, like promoting shows and things. So that was my
did
my
you have like a playbill grid where you had like all the playbills lined up?
I never put them on my wall. No, I definitely knew people who did that, but that was not one of my moves.
I keep having some notion. I always save the playbill whenever I go. I have a whole box just of playbills of plays and yeah, this is very much not a humble brag. It's not that many, but I keep having some notion. I'll do something with it, like put it in a keepsake folder or put them up on the wall or something. But nope. Mm-mm. None of that here.
I am perpetually calling my playbill collection because I always have so many. And what am I going to do with them? Nothing. Anyway,
we're talking about a show. Yeah, so, you know, Miguel gets shamed into maybe buying some art. We'll eventually see that in the future, yeah?
Yeah, he's going to buy some art in the future. And Adam tells him, I know you think I don't listen to you, but I do. And Miguel says, what does that mean? And Adam says, you'll see. By which he means WeWork is going public. Definitely because Miguel told him to do that, and not because literally every person he talked to and asked for money said, do the IPO.
Yeah, I guess that's where they justify having the Google scene. It's just like one more person saying, there is no money here for you to pull out of your hat. But we were there at the end of last episode anyway, with SoftBank being the kind of figurehead of no one's going to invest in you anymore.
Yeah.
But yes, WeWork is finally going to do it. Adam has been trying to hold back the water of going public, and eventually the dam is going to burst. And we get Adam wearing his creator shirt that we saw in the photo shoot. And this is where I think maybe for the first time, Adam introduces the We company in public.
And he's going to clarify that a few times. Anytime somebody says to him, WeWork is going public, he's going to say the We company, encompassing, you know, We Bike and We Fly and whatever other We properties there may be in the umbrella.
Well, you, Zed, have mentioned We properties, and I could not think of a better transition to bring up chart. Now, it is a podcast, so it's an audio medium, not a visual medium, but I'm going to drop, maybe I can in the chat, we're going to see if Zed can see it somehow, maybe I'll share my screen so Zed can see this, the diagram showing the corporate structure of the We company at the time of filing. Okay. It is... I would like for you to, like, as best you can on first view, Zed, can you see it okay?
Mm-hmm.
I would like for you to describe this to the listener.
We got shapes. Okay. There is a rectangle at the top that says the We company.
Seems pretty straightforward, right?
That part makes sense to me. Yep, I got that. Under that is a circle. The We company MC LLC. I know LLC is limited liability company. I do not know what MC is.
Okay.
Then we have both a straight line going down to a triangle and also a side bracket going down to that same triangle and a line coming off of that triangle. And we have general partner, intermediate subsidiaries, and certain members of our leadership team and their affiliates. That's sketchy. And in the triangle, it says We Company Partnership. Under that, we have another circle that says WeWork Companies LLC. That feels redundant, but okay.
Uh-huh. We're now at our fourth tier
yeah.
of things with the word we in it.
And now we have a family tree split off situation where we have wholly owned operations in the US and Canada, Latin America and Europe, Middle East, Africa and Australia all in one little square. We have Asia Joint Ventures.
What could that mean?
No idea. China Co, Pacific Co, Japan Co, India Co with management fee percentages under that. I don't know what that means. And Global Real Estate Acquisition and Management Platform, ARK, registered trademark perhaps. I'm lost.
I mean,
so many shapes.
What do you think? First impressions looking at this thing.
The diagram below is a simplified depiction of our organizational structure immediately following the completion of this offering. That's what it says at the top. I got sucked in by the shapes and I missed that this is the simplified depiction of the
organizational structure. The wild thing is, this IPO is combining investors in this offering into the Wii company, along with existing investors, which many of which we know are characters in the show, into this spaghettified structure of which they don't even own 100% of all of it. Each tranche and tier of these subsidiaries is also partially owned with other partners or other companies. Things like Asia Joint Ventures. A joint venture means someone else owns part of it too.
Right. Yeah.
And so I when I looked at this, my head exploded. Because I can only imagine what the, like, we're gonna see, I guess this is maybe a prelude into what comes next in the episode, but we're gonna see the investment banks start to build and make their case for basically being the IPO partners here, for like backing the IPO. And like when they get their hands onto something like this, like I just, the way they presented Galloway as being so excited when he read the S1, I have to imagine that's how they all felt when they were starting to tease all this out. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, subsidiaries and global partnerships and all that stuff, like that's not new, right? Everyone does that to some extent. But for this to all be kind of thrown on the table at one time, there's a lot to chew on.
Yeah, I don't understand how there's so many layers to it, but that is fascinating. So we're going public. The Wii company is going public. JP Morgan's going to go over the financials. And then we have a montage of all the big banks putting together their pitches for WeWork. And that's interspliced with Adam's interview on CNBC, which has got a sting for Rebecca, since that is specifically what she wanted to do. But instead, she's watching Adam do that interview. So once again, he is in the limelight and she is struggling to get the attention that she wants for her project.
Zed, I have a question for you. Are you a Adam, a Bob Marley, or a Mother Teresa?
Oh my God. The icons of, what did they call him?
Elevating the world's consciousness. Okay.
Well, yeah, of course. How could I possibly forget?
It's literally the brand, Zed. It's the mission of the company we've been with for 2 months.
What a trio, you know?
I mean, the fact that whoever was the host of this bit into that and just went with it is chef's kiss. Chef's kiss for not only leaning into the world's consciousness, but pulling out Mother Teresa and Bob Marley as the no Gandhi, nothing. Nope. Okay.
You know, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do? We're going to move on. So then we have the like montage of banks pitching to underwrite the IPO. Again, this is stuff that's like not super interesting, I think, to the average viewer and not essential for understanding the story. The simple version of it is this: like Adam wants to pick the bank that is going to present WeWork as the highest valuation that he possibly can.
Right. That seems to be his single motivation.
And he exploits his relationship with Jamie in order to get Jamie to set a higher. I don't know if this is technically a valuation. I actually don't know the Wall Street term of what this is considered or an estimate. But what I do know is that those banks stand to garner tens of hundreds of millions of dollars in fees for being the one who carries forward and brokers this IPO.
Financialization. It makes me so angry. It's all made up and it's just like people making money on other people's money in like the stupidest ways. But Adam's gonna go with JP Morgan And then he's like, yeah, well, I want to help write the prospectus so that we can do it the new way, because those, you know, those silly financial legal documents are so dry and boring. And that's just not me. So you, your people send over a draft and then I'll punch it up with some energy.
Well, we are definitely going to talk about this S1 and these financial documents in the second half of the podcast. But at this point, we have to stop for some financialization of our own. It's time for an ad break. We'll see you on the other side.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we are back. And as we come back, Rebecca comes home to Adam and he asks her to come sit with him at the table. And she blatantly ignores him and heads up the stairs.
I'm not asking you as your husband. I'm reading this, what you wrote down. I have no memory of him saying he said this.
Yeah, while she's standing on the stairs.
I'm not asking you as your husband. I'm asking you as your CEO.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I don't even have words for that.
I mean, it feels gross, but also I think it's him trying to get her to engage with the business, even if he won't engage with him, even if she won't engage with him. But they're so intertwined, obviously, that you can't do one without doing the other. And what he is going to propose to her is that he wants the S1 to tell the story of we. And the we has always been you and me, has been Adam and Rebecca. So he wants her to help write it because he couldn't possibly do it without her. And she says, no.
No, not interested. He tries everything, right? I mean, this is where Adam is both trying to get out of the doghouse as a husband, but he is also trying to, I think, spin the story of WeWork as best he can through this S1. But he's great at verbalizing these things and reading the person on the other end of the room. And I would contend that part of why Adam is struggling here is that he is really good at writing for a specific audience.
Yeah, he knows the investor, general,
exactly,
financial people of all time,
exactly. People who are going to scrutinize what he does, people are going to look through his balance sheet. He hates those people.
Yeah.
So how's he going to write?
He wants to pitch himself, not a bunch of numbers.
169 times he wants to pitch himself. apparently, I don't know if that was the number, but I'm going to hold off, Zed, a little bit on some of the creativity around the S1, because we'll get back to it. But suffice it to say, this is not the first time that WeWork has participated in some, what shall we call it, conscious nomenclature.
Mm.
So, yeah, Adam could really use some
help.
That
doesn't seem to mean anything to me, so that sounds correct.
Yeah. Adam just wants to say to Rebecca, how can you elevate the world's consciousness if you're not willing to forgive? I will give a point to that one.
Yeah.
I mean, he's using it. He's weaponizing it to serve a purpose. But still.
Yes, it is both correct and maybe not an appropriate thing to do.
Both things can be true. Trademark
my favorite thing to say. Yep. So we're back at WeWork, and the employees are discussing buying stock options, but they don't actually have the money to buy these stock options. The assistant, Phil, I think, got a loan from his grandma to buy more stock. And then Adam gives everyone the day off, the rest of the day off, and the next day off to go, you know, live their lives. He's very much like the teacher in community building who wants everybody to seize the day in that moment. I feel like he's like, go fall in love, you know.
Again, maybe I missed some like context here, but is he just legitimately giving them 2 days off for funsies, or is he trying to
as
clear
far
the
as I can tell
for Rebecca?
No, I think he's just, you know, having a flight of fancy and feeling good, and is like, go away, enjoy your life.
I mean, you do love it. And I will say this, in 2022, the year in which we are recording this podcast, I would contend that giving your team time off is more valuable than half of the financial bonuses that a lot of these companies would be willing to throw at them. For people who are working like that to actually be real human beings and have 2 days without work and without emails on top of a weekend, not too bad.
Yeah, would be nice.
Would imagine be nice, wouldn't it?
As productivity is soaring, imagine the thought of giving people more time off because they're getting way more work done in the same amount of time currently. I don't know, just a thought.
Can you think of how many lattes they could buy in their 2 days?
Lattes or cappuccinos?
Lattuccinos?
Because Rebecca's going to show up with the S1s of the top 10 IPOs of the previous year. So she's like ready to do the work. And Adam's like, I don't want any of this boring stuff. And he comes into her office with a cappuccino and wearing the classic werewolf mask. And they're going to argue about whether it's a cappuccino or a latte. And he says, my assistants call them lattes. And Rebecca says, because you call them lattes and no one wants to tell you that you're wrong.
That's great.
It's important. It's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. And then this is the fight where we talk about, you know, he wants forgiveness. She wants to elevate the world's consciousness. Again, by this point, like, they're going to get back together. You know, they're going to get back together. That's the whole point of the scene. We've literally cleared the office of everyone else.
And then we'll have our brief little interlude of Miguel at the gallery to buy the real Liechtenstein, but it costs $48 million with the Friends of the Newmans discount.
Although, the person come on.
The person who's showing it to him says, I've heard you'll be able to afford it soon.
This is terrible sales, first of all. I mean, sure, like, you know what they're willing to pay for it, but if Adam was the one who set him up for this, boy, he set him up to pay a pretty penny.
Yeah,
because
I mean, Adam, what is money to Adam? It's nothing.
What is money to Adam? Well, earlier we saw that Adam asked for an additional line of credit from Jamie Dimon, his personal banker. Something we did not see in this episode, which my research has found, which we might see in the next episode. So I apologize if I 2 weeks in a row
spoiling real life.
Spoiler away. But before the IPO, Adam does liquidate $700 million in WeWork shares.
Wow.
Between sales and loans, he borrows against $700 million. By comparison, the CEO of Snapchat before their IPO, he ended up getting like $3 million in cash and like $8 million in loans. The CEO of Uber did the same thing, but again, in like the low teens, $700 million. That's how Adam and Rebecca came out whole with all this, because they got out before it got public.
Apparently.
I say this as a as an observer of a television show, not as a statement of fact, which might be held to any sort of hearsay, liability, legal mumbo jumbo. Got to protect myself.
But Adam Newman, if you're listening to our podcast.
Yeah, come talk to us. Please. I know Zed will not be here for it. I will. It's fine. I would love to know. I have a million questions to ask you. Seriously, I'll do it. I will elevate the consciousness of the podcast listeners here single-handedly if I need to.
Well, now this is exciting. Rebecca's going to come up to Adam and tell him he was right. The S1s are useless. And then Adam has more dead things from the lawyers, because they're all of this paperwork is just useless old dead stuff that's not the way they want the world to be. But their risk factors, according to the lawyers, are that their rapid growth may be unsustainable. They've experienced losses, and growing at this rate may prevent profitability for the foreseeable future. They don't care. They want to change the words to fit what they want them to be. This is what Adam and Rebecca do best. They just change the world around them to fit their idea of elevation of the world's consciousness. And so we're going to bang the gong and say some words.
The gong made a reappearance. You all were so right to cue into the gong as a recurring character. We've seen more of the gong than we have of Miguel, I think, at this point. So Zed, unsurprisingly, with Dr. Amanda not being here, someone did have to do some additional research. And I have done a little bit more. And I have in front of me the listed risk factors on the WeWork IPO. Now, this may not have been the original IPO. This might have been from the second one, I must confess. But much of the language was the same. I did want to highlight a couple of ones. Bullet point, I think six here, says, we have a history of losses and we may be unable to achieve profitability.
Yeah, that's basically what they said on the show.
Yep, that's a risk factor. Here's another one.
Profitability seems to kind of be the whole point, right?
Yes. They did put in parentheses, as determined in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles.
Oh, just those.
Which we'll get to. I promise we'll get to those. That should sound like a promise and not a threat, but promise. We'll get back to Gap. Here's risk factor number eight. Our internal controls, financial systems, and procedures need further development for a public company and a company of our global scale.
Man.
Yeah. And I'll just add one more for you. Risk factor number 12 here. Failure to comply with anti-money laundering requirements could subject us to enforcement actions, fines, penalties, sanctions, and other remedial actions.
Those are bad things. I know that.
Yeesh.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeesh. But that's why they have to disclose that stuff. That's why risk factors are important. But none of those have words that Rebecca wants to hear.
No. And is this also where we're going to talk about, not quite, but we're basically at EBITDA, right?
EBITDA? Yes. EBITDA. EBITDA. Longy. Yeah. So Rebecca doesn't care about EBITDA. She doesn't care about profitability. What are the things that Rebecca cares about, Zed?
She cares about community and growth and positivity and hope.
Meaning spiritual growth, intention. You know, I don't know how many times intention shows up in an S1, but...
And Bruce is going to call them and ask why they're writing the S1. And he's going to show up. He's coming to WeWork. He needs to know what's going on. What's going on is that Rebecca and Adam are in robes, and Adam asks how many pages they have, and Rebecca says they have 9 words.
I mean, they clearly did the dirty in the office, and instead of writing this, right?
Yeah, well, and surely not for the first time. But they have the whole building to themselves, so this is the best time to do it, I guess. If it's gonna happen, they had to have the makeup sex.
That's right. I think really, Adam, this was a long con in order for Adam to get makeup sex in the WeWork offices. That's why he let people off for 2 days.
Yeah, he had plans. He had ulterior motives.
Okay, now is where we get the EBITDA, Zed. And I know this was your favorite part of the episode, wasn't it?
Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what that word means.
Yeah, it's basically just like how you spread losses over time. That's the idea. So you amortize it over time, losses and gains. It's a little bit complicated, but essentially the idea of EBITDA is a fair comparison of earnings. And most Wall Street investment is based on your earnings. And they use EBITDA to offset some of the wilder things. And so what they'll tend to do is take your earnings, your EBITDA, and they will multiply it by some sort of multiplier. And that will determine roughly your valuation and then ultimately your share price. I mean, obviously what people are willing to pay determines your share price, but the estimate of the value. Where this gets really messy is when you start introducing other types of earnings projections that aren't EBITDA. So an example of this is in software as a service, in SaaS, they will use just revenue, just net revenue as the kind of factor for evaluation. And that's why people like Masayoshi-san want to invest in SaaS companies, because the assumption is if you're bringing in all this revenue, however much money you're spending up to now doesn't matter because you've already made the product. So you could stop spending money and continue to make more money. And the issue here is that WeWork is not a tech company. WeWork is not a SaaS company. And so they are going to be held to the EBITDA standard of like a real estate company instead of the revenue.
Because they're a real estate company.
Because they're like a semi-real estate company. But they apparently, this is not the first time they did this. They did a bond release where they introduced terms like, let me see if I wrote these down, community adjusted earnings before interest, tax, depreciation.
Yeah, that's what they reference on the show, because Adam says that they need numbers, but the only numbers that Wall Street actually cares about are letters, which is the EBITDA. And Rebecca's going to say, if the letters don't fit, we come up with new ones. And they're going to make their community-based or community-adjusted EBITDA that's going to subtract a ton of expenses.
Yes. Yes. They
seems,
also
be missing the point.
They also introduced like an EBITDA without growth. It's a whole thing. If you go dig and you find Scott Galloway, you search Scott Galloway, WeWTF, you find his whole blog post about the S1s. I said, I'm just going to read to you the headers of like the sections here. Number one is cult. You could imagine. Number two is nomenclature. So this is where he starts talking about the EBITDA issue of it all. Next is invented metrics. So he gives a few suggestions of other metrics they could have used. EBG, earnings before gluten. EPEPW, earnings before equal pay for women.
Oh my god.
I found another blog post that was talking about EMFEPT, earnings before moving fast excluding broken things. And then we have earnings before branded fleeced vest amortization.
Oh goodness.
But it's a big deal. It's actually like a really big issue in Wall Street, is companies releasing like made up terms to try and, I think, fleece, not company branded fleece, but fleece investors into viewing some sort of valuation different from the real core metric. So Adam's not the first person to do it, but holy moly, they went big.
Yeah. We'll include a link to this to this article in the show notes if you want to check it out. And that also includes that diagram that I tried to explain via shapes. If you want to get a look at it, I don't know that it'll make any sense to you, but if you want to look at it, it's there. So that's in the show notes if that is of interest to you.
That's the whole point. It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense.
What also doesn't make sense is that we're going to watch Jamie, Chloe, and Mikey at the Newman's apartment for some reason, drinking their liquor and talking about spending their hypothetical millions, counting their chickens before they're hatched. We did get the excellent joke of Chloe, which I really liked. It got spelled out in the subtitles as CHLO-WE.
That's excellent.
And so we're just going to see them kind of hanging around, enjoying being in the house and like finding all the random stuff that rich people have. Phil's going to ask Chloe if she wants to make out. Chloe's looking at buying this bag and she says it costs more than she made last year. And that is why I want to talk about the price of this bag. Because she's going to purchase it at the very end of the episode. She's going to click buy on a bag that cost $23,000,
That is the second most wild part of this.
Right.
Because that's more than what she made last year.
Exactly. So that's an unfathomable price to me to pay for any like single object. And at the same time, it's not nearly enough money to live on in New York City.
This can't be true. This can't be
how,
true.
How?
Unless she works like quarter time or one third time or something, right?
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
It could also be just like a turn of phrase, you know, that someone uses. But yeah, look, if you're making under $23,000 in New York City, that's a challenge, to say the least.
Even at $15 an hour, which was minimum wage by then, before taxes, you're looking at $30,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah. Something smells fishy about the accounting principles in Chloe. She's going to get audited. That's what I'm saying right now. but no, I mean, right, this is the scene where we finally get to see from the employee's perspective. But again, it's even in Adam and Rebecca's apartment. So it's all about Adam and Rebecca again.
Mm-hmm. And then Adam's going to FaceTime Mikey because he can't get the printer at the office to work. So now in the middle of his 2 days off, he's got to go into the office and I think turn on a power strip, it seems like, was the issue.
Yeah, replug back in a power strip. That's pretty classic personal assistant stuff right there.
This happens at my job all the time because we have a series of power strips for all of our walkies to get plugged into. And they're on shelves and each power strip is plugged into the previous one until it gets to the power source. And if one of the power strips is turned off, it creates this whole cascade effect of the other power strips not getting power and then nothing gets charged. Broadway,
this is a metaphor. This is a metaphor.
We're great.
I don't know what that's a metaphor for, but something about the cascading daisy chain of power strips into a walkie-talkie.
Globalization and supply chains and the economy, something like that, I think.
Would you say that that first power strip is too big to fail, Zed?
It is. It definitely is. But classic check and make sure the power strip is on is an easy fix for a lot of problems in my experience.
Well, from power strip to power trip, we now get Adam.
Oh, my God.
I thought I could get away with it. I thought I could get away with the terrible transition. I didn't even get an eye roll. I got an oh, my God. Yeah. Well, now, Adam, I got to tell you, I spent this entire scene waiting for Adam to fire him. I thought he was just going to, like, fire him or screw him over in some way. That's what I thought.
Yeah, this was almost the most tension in the episode. It's like these couple of minutes of him asking Mikey about like how long he's been with the company and has he been drinking tonight and like what is he up to? And it's like, oh, is he going to get found out? Is he in trouble? Like, what's going on? And it's just, oh, no, no, no. You need to try the good stuff. I'm surprised based on like everything we've been told, that he can't tell that like that's the it's the smell of the good stuff.
Yeah, I'm also surprised that like Adam hasn't given him the good stuff, right? Like Adam mm-hmm. has been very, especially with other people's money, effusive with food and scantily clad people. So I'd be surprised if this is the first time that that Mikey is tasting this. Mm-hmm. But they keep escalating the tension here, because then Mikey is like drinking more and laying back, and then he's saying yeah. things like, "Oh, it used to be so much better. You know, it was like we really felt like you were being part of something." He even corrected Rebecca and said, "You
weren't like, no, you weren't there.
And that's where I thought, like, "Oh boy."
Yeah, that's where Adam's like, okay, Mikey, time to go. Like, here, take the bottle of tequila. Please leave. You're not helping.
But rather than leading up to Mikey getting fired or otherwise held to account, apparently this is, we're led to believe, what inspired Rebecca to really feel like we need to recapture the soul of WeWork. Mm-hmm. In the S-1 filing for our Wall Street IPO.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It needs
because
images.
Because WeWork is not a business. It's a feeling.
How does that make you feel, Zed?
I'm pretty sure WeWork is a business.
WeWork is.
And
I mean,
not a person, and it doesn't have a soul. And Rebecca is not the soul of the company.
I mean, let's be honest, as it's presented in the show, WeWork is barely a business.
That's also fair.
But it's certainly more than a feeling. I can tell you that much.
More than a feeling. I think I'm dreaming. Yeah.
Well, we do get our call back to the summer camp. They look at the picture. She, you know, loves Adam. They love Adam. They resent her. But now Rebecca is finally able to accept who she is. She's not a maverick. She's not a magician. She's not even a chief branding officer. We knew that. We knew that,
yes,
Rebecca.
We definitely already knew these things.
No.
I used to think it was my job to save the soul of the company.
No.
But no. I am the soul of the company.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boy. It's
really difficult to stomach. And what they're going to write in the S1 is, WeWork is a community company committed to maximum global impact.
I have to say, for all of my bashing of this show in this particular podcast, it has been an enjoyable watch for the most part. This particular moment, I got so much visceral reaction from, of like the delusions of grandeur finally manifesting in its peak form. I am the soul of the company. Ugh.
And I mean, Anne Hathaway continues to give a remarkable performance in this show. Like, just give her the awards already. I would love to see it. What a character to be playing.
What a moment. If this is what Maslow meant by self-actualization at the top of the pyramid, we don't need to see more of that, because it's mm-hmm. terrifying, but yeah, well presented by Anne Hathaway. Got to give credit to the performers here. Mm-hmm. Well, clearly then we go off screen and they create the S1, the Newman, Paltrow Newman S1. Uh-huh. And we come back to our good friend of reason, Cam.
Cam. Yeah.
Who I did go and look back again. I looked back through like the holdings of everything and like, nope, Cam. Can't find a Cam who owns all.
Still the amalgamation of all the voices of reason.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's a bunch of them. Like people who owned big stakes of WeWork included the like co-owner and chairman of the Sacramento Kings.
Wow.
There's a bunch of other like investment firms along with Bruce Dunleavy and Benchmark Capital. Like I said, they had like eight rounds, 8-9 rounds of capital before they IPO'd. So yes, Cam is an amalgamation of the voice of reason at the table. Mm-hmm. And let's just say he's not a fan. Not a fan.
Shockingly, yeah. And then Adam's going to tell something about a Mandarin and when he was opening the location in Shanghai. And I did not follow this story at all. But the point is, Adam's an emperor.
Yeah, but the emperor has no clothes. We've established correct. That. So yeah. I think we're supposed to connect the dots on that as the viewer. But Bruce is about to connect the dots to a new approach. And boy, this is Adam and Rebecca at their most delusional. My king, my queen. This is Shakespearean.
Yeah.
This is Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what Shakespeare character worked on Wall Street? None of them. Rebecca. Rebecca worked on Wall Street.
Might as well call her the Merchant of Venice.
We that was a good job. They landed for 3 weeks. That was a good
yeah.
Well done.
She worked on Wall Street
for 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, and needless to say, the S1 doesn't go over well. Let me see if there's anything I want to say about the S1. I'll take a quote from one of their bond investments that is similar language they had in the S1 that I did copy down. This was not in the show, but just to like contextualize this quote, this was when they were describing earnings EBITDA minus growth investments, which I guess doesn't count. I don't know. Quote, in other words, if we stopped growth investments, we'd have a very healthy business running healthy margins.
So we know how to fix it.
For
we're just not going to do it.
Community adjusted EBITDA is a number they can hold on to.
Good God.
It's so easy. It's so fun. Look, you know, you have to imagine, that the people who do these analyses on Wall Street, right, they're under immense pressure to make complex decisions. And I know you might look down on those roles because it's just pushing number and papers around, but they are very difficult jobs that are highly competitive. It's got to be rare that they look at one of these and get a giggle and a real laugh. And I had to imagine that was a good week to be in those rooms.
Yeah, that is probably true. And then the end of this episode is a little odd. Like, Mikey and his friends are headed to the Hamptons on a helicopter. They're very excited. Because it's not our like trio of employees. It is Mikey and some kids we've never seen before.
Yeah, Mikey and friends.
Uh-huh. Miguel is in the office and he's looking over the S1 and he just does a quick, you know, just a quick search for how many times Adam's name gets mentioned. 167 times. How many times does Rebecca's name get mentioned on 20 pages? And how many times does co-founder Miguel get mentioned in the S1?
Looks like it's 6 times. 6?
Yeah.
Miguel did get a piece of art delivered. We're not going to say what it says on the art, but for those of you who watch the episodes, you can appreciate a bit different than the piece he was originally looking at. This whole notion of Adam as cult leader definitely makes an appearance in Scott Galloway's blog. Adam is mentioned, it looks like 167 is what it showed on the show. 169 is what Galloway counted. By comparison, the founder CEOs of Zoom was mentioned 38 times in their S1 filing, of Uber 29, of Lyft 28 or 27, and of Slack 18 times.
Wild.
So orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
Orders of magnitude.
A little bit of focus on the man here.
The myth, the legend.
Yeah. The
Messiah. Myth is definitely right. So we intersperse that, the Miguel, the Mikey, with the S1 getting absolutely wrecked. And if you want some light reading that goes into like real techno babble business jargon, you can go back and read the blog posts and articles about the S1. They're vicious. And I do wonder, like, obviously we're meant to believe that the substance of the business was flawed, that there are things that Adam did that were either unethical or certainly problematic and would catch the eye of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But I also have to wonder how much of this was just a feeding frenzy, that the people who write about these things, about these unicorns, about these tech IPOs were just waiting to smell blood in the water and took the opportunity to just rip something like this to shreds. And whether, you know, good, I don't know how they could have avoided this other than running a good business, but there's some part of me that feels like they didn't manage the message very well, and this got out of hand real quick.
Yeah, clearly publicly this is a disaster. Like, people who know things are looking this over and are effectively like, what am I looking at? This is not something to be taken seriously, because you took this serious financial legal document and you put a bunch of pictures and nonsense in it.
Yeah. And you know, what's wild too is we're at the end of episode 7. We got one more episode left. They still haven't IPO'd. They still haven't done it.
This they haven't crashed yet.
Pre-IPO. So, but you know, Adam and Rebecca are back together. And the emperor is now down on Wall Street, and he will soon be found to have no clothes. And we're going to see how this plays out.
Yeah. I would love to know, when was the first episode where I said, I feel like we're at the peak of the roller coaster? Because I feel like we've been at the peak of the roller coaster for 3 or 4 episodes now. And it has to crash next week, right?
Yes, I think almost certainly.
Certainly. We're out of track here.
It will. That actually is a good analogy to describe what's actually happened with the company, which is, rather than it being a roller coaster that builds up and falls down, it's just a roller coaster that runs out of track and is going to face plant. I've described it as Icarus going too close to the sun, but this is not a situation like we're not seeing the wax wings melt over a slow period of time. We're just seeing all the warning signals saying it's hot. The scrutiny is high.
It's a bit like they were given all of the track to make a whole roller coaster, but then what they did with that track is just make one really big drop at the beginning. And then it was too late and there was no more track left to make the rest of the roller coaster. They just made the highest drop in the history of, you know, roller coasters.
I mean, that's kind of the new business model for most amusement parks anyway. Classic roller coasters are old school. So I have to ask you, Zed, we have one more episode left. Mm-hmm. We know where we end, or at least we know one aspect of where we end, which is Adam getting fired and he and Rebecca leaving the office with some element of composure. What else do we have to do next episode?
I mean, if we're following this trajectory of the story fundamentally being about the two of them, as much as the show is called We Crashed and we're going to see them get ejected from the company, I still feel like, and this will probably be kind of annoying, but I feel like what we're going to get is a happy ending for them personally.
Yeah.
Because like, we know they're still together in real life. And
we
have,
know they've
money
got $900 million.
Yeah. So like, it is a happy ending for them. The company became a bit of a disaster, and then they just sort of like took their $700 million and like flicked a match at the burning fire that is WeWork and like left.
I mean, are we
going to
do this
them?
Thing where they like, you know, they IPO and then it comes back, or they pull back the IPO, they replay the scene of him being fired, but from a different perspective or a different angle. And then it's going to fade to black and we're going to hear seagulls and they're going to be back in Corte Madera on the beach and be like, oh, well, that sucked, but we're still rich. Okay, thanks. Bye. Awards, please.
Yeah, basically. That's essentially what I'm expecting.
Okay. I would love a surprise. I would love something else. Maybe there's more to the Miguel story that we don't know.
I would love that, but I am not expecting that.
They're going to have to bring someone else in who's going to be CEO. I don't know that we're going to watch that. I don't know. I probably should stop predicting what the next episode is going to be. I just feel like what's left to show other than them landing on their feet, which feels weird.
Right. It does not feel like it goes along with the title of the show.
Exactly. Exactly. And maybe there's some, you know, they've hit us over the head with some visual metaphors and things. So maybe they will have some sort of way of showing that the we of the We Crashed is not Adam and Rebecca, but is the we of the company and how they get out alive.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. I think we were led to believe that this was going to be a show about the company falling apart. But I think ultimately what we're kind of seeing is it's a show about the two of them getting through literally anything together.
I mean, I worry about spoilers, but as I've said, like they, you know, he gets out his money. They've also mentioned the thing about him buying real estate and selling back the name of We back to the company or leasing that back.
Yeah,
to
all
the
these
company.
Like sketchy business dealings that he did as a private individual with the company as an entity.
Yeah, so like maybe we double down a little bit more on that, but yeah, that's sketchtastic. So I'm looking forward for a sketchtastic finale. I'm not looking forward to the end of this podcast, but all good things must come to an end at some point.
Yeah, so next week we'll be covering the final episode, whatever that may entail. And then I think we're going to try and watch the documentary and see how the story compares from the dramatization to what the documentary will show us. And then that may be it. That's probably it. But if you have feedback, if you have thoughts about the telling of the story or the truth of the story itself, we would love to hear from you. You can hit us up in the Discord if you are a patron of Post Show Recaps, or you can also chat with us on Twitter. Amanda is Dr. Amanda R. Troy.
I'm at DJ LaBelle Klein if you want to talk to me about this show.
Uh-huh. And I am at Hard Rock Hope. So you can hit up all three of us if you have thoughts or feelings about any of this. Clearly, we have lots of thoughts and feelings. We would love to hear yours as well as we bring our coverage to a close in the next couple of weeks. I'm glad we ended up doing this show. I'm glad we got to podcast together and talk about all this like weird, intricate business capitalist stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if the show has let us down a little bit along the way, I think it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, and you learned something along the way. Zed, you are now ready to be a retail investor on Wall Street to be the CEO of your own tech company. I will say, if watching this proves nothing else, I think there are a bunch of us who are going, I could do better than that. I could do better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Some elements of it, at least.
Yeah, maybe some of you will even end up working at a startup now.
Oh, who would? What an ending, Zed.
Anyway, Troy, you got anything else going on that you want to talk about?
No life updates at all. There's no hypocrisy on this podcast. Hit me up in the Discord if you want some inside scoop, folks. Nevertheless, you've wasted a good hour and a half with us talking about WeWork, WeCrashed, and the collective we that we are all living under. Unless there's anything else, I think this is probably a good time set for us to say bye.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.